going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, spicy with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And it is my birthday today. That's right. I am 23 years of age. What an achievement. Really is. When I started this podcast, I was only 20 years old. So look how far we have come. Or was I 21? I actually think I was going to turn 21 when I was beginning this I was 20 when I began this podcast, and what a fun time it has been since then. And on today's episode, we got a lot of fun stuff, especially with your UFC 320 official predictions, the rematch on Kalayev Poatan, very exciting, and Merab, Corey Sandhagen, another title shot. This is an absolutely fantastic card. I really love the main card for UFC 320, and we're going to be ending today's episode going through all currently 14 matchups and dropping our predictions. I'm very thankful that Teba Gaudier was able to stay on the card after he lost his opponent in Ozzy Diaz. But also, before that, we will be dropping our quick picks for NFL Week 5. That's right, the fifth week of the NFL season will be going down. Now, I've been on fire this year, guys. I have been killing it. So you best lock in and listen to who I have to predict. We'll walk away victorious. We also are going to be recapping Dana White's Contender Series, Episode 8 of Season 9, as we handed out four new contracts. And as well, we have one new UFC fight, but I am going to start off today's episode predicting who I think is going to be some new fights to be made, because Dana White is going live today to announce some new fights. So without further ado, let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it with a singular new UFC fight I have to share with you guys for UFC 322, going to be on the main card November 15th at Madison Square Garden, Beneil Dariush and Benoit St. Denis. Props to Benoit St. Denis. First off, I will say, for getting another fight before the end of the year, but I will say he was offered the Charles Oliveira fight and turned it down. I don't know why. I cannot really explain his reasoning, but I will say it is kind of a doozy that he didn't take that fight, because I think he might have had an excellent shot of beating Charles Oliveira. But as for this, he should manhandle Beneil Dariush. The fact that Beneil Dariush beat Renato Moicano is still kind of shocking to me, but that's his only win in the last 2 years, so definitely going to be riding with BSD in this one. Looking forward to it. Benoit absolutely humbled Mauricio Ruffy last time out. That wasn't even that long ago, and it was so exciting to see. So Benoit St. Denis, Beneil Dariush, just adding to the already stacked UFC 322 card. I cannot wait to watch that card. It is going to be fantastic. Little I guess 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, little appetizer of all the excitement you're going to have for November. November's going to be a great month for fighting, but I did want to drop some predictions real quick, because Dana White's going live today, and it's my birthday, so I'm going with a birthday dinner out with my girlfriend and my parents, so I will be unable to officially wait around for Dana White. And knowing Dana White, he might not even make this announcement till midnight. Goodness knows where that billionaire is right now. But I do think, my prediction, I think we are going to be getting the UFC 323 main event and the UFC Qatar main event, and even another big fight here or there. So As I look through all the weight divisions, I'm going to start off with flyweight. I think Alexander Pantoa versus Joshua Van is going to be announced. This is so heavily rumored for UFC 323 in the co-main event slot. I think it's just so obvious. That's the direction they're going to do. They just added Joshua Van to the video game. You best bet they're going to be doing that. So I think that'll be one of the fights that Dana White announces. For bantamweight, I don't think there's a big fight there that you could announce. Now for featherweight, Couple options. We, of course, have Mosfar, Volk, Yair Rodriguez, Leroy Murphy, Aljamain Sterling, Diego Lopez. You have a lot going on at featherweight. So I do think they're going to announce Volk's next opponent. I do think that is the, you know, the choice. And if it's going to be going over, you know, Pantoa and Van, I do think they're going to go for someone who is coming off of a big win, and that is Leroy Murphy. I believe they are going to give Leroy Murphy the next title shot. I do think they will then do Mosfar Evlavia Rodriguez and then do Diego Lopez Aljamain Sterling. That is where I believe the direction is headed for this division. So I am going to go with Volkanovski to take on Leroy Murphy as the second fight announcement that Dana White makes. Now, those are what I think are going to be the two big ones. Now, some other options, lightweight division. Now, we do have Armin Sarukian out there. There's people saying maybe it's Armin Sarukian and Ito Pira. I'm going to wait on that. I don't think that could maybe happen in 2026. I don't think that's going to be an announcement. But I could see them potentially doing Dan Hooker being involved in a fight to some degree. I don't know. I'm not exactly overly sold on that. And along the similar lines, heading to the welterweight division, Shavkat Rachmanov and Bilal Muhammad, I could see that being the UFC Qatar main event. That is one option. But what I do think, maybe the front runner to be the UFC Qatar main event, maybe Hyam Blachowicz and Bogdan Guskov. I've been hearing some word that that light heavyweight showdown will be taking place, but I don't know for certain. So I don't want to say anything too much. And even when I look at the heavyweight division, there isn't really a fight you can make there. So I do think Hyam Blachowicz versus Bogdan Guskov may be the main event for UFC Qatar. If not, I could see Bilal and Shavkat Rachmanov. So those are just some minute predictions at the end of the day. But other than that, I mean, who knows what Dana White's going to announce. The fact that we get Beneil Dariush and Benoit Saint-Denis, I think it's super fun. You know, I absolutely love Benoit Saint-Denis. Been a fan of him since he came into the UFC. And after going through a little rough spot of getting knocked out by Poirier, getting dominated by Moicano, I'm happy to have him back. And actually, speaking of Moicano, isn't it crazy? He turned down the Charles Oliveira fight for streaming. That's right. He turned down fighting Charles Oliveira to continue making YouTube content. You can't make this up. You can't make this up. That's absurd. That's absurd. So Moicano, enjoy your time creating YouTube videos and miss out on an opportunity to main event in Brazil against one of the greatest lightweight champions of all time. That's just absurd if you ask me. But something that's not absurd is Dana White's Contender Series. And while we didn't do good on predictions at all, but I had a blast watching this card. So nonetheless, let's recap Dana White's Contender Series 9.8 and discuss our four new hirees into the UFC. Taking us off, we had Rashid Vagabov taking on Paulo Henrique, and this wasn't even close, you know. Rashid Vagabov dominated him, 30-27s across the board, and he was feeling cocky, he was feeling confident, he was talking to Dana White during the fight, saying he's going to be a world champion, but he didn't really perform like a world champion. He came in at minus 800, which I learned, and I was like, that is an insane stat line right there, and just couldn't get it done. Couldn't get it done. You know, he grappled him to death. I mean, round three, 4 minutes and 51 seconds of control time. Like, he attempted two subs. You know, we got to give him that. But other than that, you know, on the feet in round two and round one, he looked crisp. Like, this guy can clearly hang in the UFC, but he didn't show it here. He really didn't. If you can't put away a guy like Paulo Henrique, even if you're looking good, you're not cut out to be in the UFC. And even funny enough, Paulo Henrique had Charles Oliveira in his corner. I knew he trained at Charles Oliveira's gym, but I didn't know that Charles was going to be in his corner. So that was interesting, but Rashid Vagabov, utter domination. He'll improve to 14-2. I have a feeling if he goes out and literally gets like 3 to 4 wins, he will come back and go right into the UFC. He could even step in on short notice. But, you know, not getting a contract really does say a lot because Dana White was, you know, adamant. Like, if you're being cocky and confident, but you're not getting the finish, you're just not going to make it in the UFC. So Paulo Henrique falls to 12-2. Still some potential with him. He didn't look awful, but Rashid Vagabov, tough way to open the card too with a boring 3-round decision. I mean, it wasn't that boring either. I think it was just like Rashid Vagabov clearly had the skill set to get the finish and just wasn't. So Rashid Vagabov defeats Paulo Henrique, does not get the contract though. But then we went on a spree, 4 finishes, 3 in round 1. This is where it got entertaining. Curtis Gamble and Demba Sack. And I really thought that Curtis Gamble he didn't have the look. You know, Demba Sack looked more intimidating, which we'll talk about intimidation in a second. But, I mean, wasn't even close. Curtis Campbell took him down twice, ended up hitting him with a knee as they were coming up from the clinch when Demba was getting up. And the scrambles right off the bat, these two just went at it just right from the get-go. And, you know, it was super entertaining, you know, watching the scrambling, but too little too late. Demba gets clipped with a beautiful knee, goes down 1:20, and Curtis Campbell gets the knockout victory. Improves to 8-0 and really had some flair. He really did. So similar to maybe Paddy Pimblett, but I wouldn't really compare him to Paddy Pimblett. They were doing that comparison, but I don't really care for that. He, you know, he has the flair, he has the fire, just doesn't really have the look, if you ask me. But Curtis Campbell coming to the UFC, tear it up. Featherweight division will always have you. I'll be curious to see how he does against UFC level competition, though. That is where I will be maybe a bit skeptical of his abilities. But moving on, welterweight division, Christopher Alvidrez knocks out Elisner Kubanza with 16 seconds left in round number one. And this guy, I mean, Elisner Kubanza looked scary. He really did. But the one thing he didn't have was a chin. Gets dropped twice in round one. He's able to bounce back. might I add, and eats just a flurry of punches. 53 total strikes to 12. He was eating punches left, right, and center. And to be fair, Lesnar couldn't put him out of there, or Christopher couldn't put Lesnar out of there. But I think it just showed that, you know, Christopher can stay at the pressure, keep punching him, keep repeatedly hitting him. And if anything, it showed that Kubanza has a chin. It can really just eat shots over and over and over. But Kubanza will fall to 7-1. It kind of sucks. He has this intimidation factor, which makes him really look good, but just couldn't really get done. As for Christopher, he moves up to 7-1, and, you know, getting around one TKO makes him look impressive. Yet another guy, because I've seen a lot of people fight on this season. We've seen, oh my gosh, unlimited 8 episodes now. I just don't know if a lot of the people who fought on this card are going to be the killers in the UFC, because Christopher, as good as he looked, I'd be curious to put him in there against someone who is a veteran of the welterweight division, someone who has had some UFC experience, and that would really make me wonder where his ceiling lies. But Alvarez looked impressive, got it done, and at the end of the day, you know what? He's getting a UFC contract, and I'm not, so I can't even hate him one bit. Then, one of the more interesting fights, Charles Jourdain's younger brother beats one of the Fighting Nerds' high proteges in Magno Diaz, and Luis Jourdain, man, he is ready for the UFC. I mean, I thought he had Magno out of there in round one. You know, he was striking him like crazy, and for a guy who had never gotten a submission win in his career, he submits him 39 seconds into round number 3. 91 total strikes to 29, 78 significant strikes to 26. This was action packed, and Magno Diaz looked good too. I do want to say that, you know, for Magno Diaz getting dominated, the one thing he wasn't doing was throwing. He wasn't throwing. He would clip, you know, Luis a couple times, but he just wasn't throwing. He had a really good submission attempt as well at one point with a oh my gosh, what is it? Yeah, a rear naked, a guillotine. Yeah, guillotine locked in. He went to roll over to land it, and he missed it. But Luis Jourdain looked impressive. He'll improve to 9-3. He's going to try and get on that Vancouver card, and honestly, I don't see a reason why not. It's in 17 days. Let's make it happen. Good stuff, Luis Jourdain. As for Magno, he'll fall to 6-2, but if the finers are high on him, he goes out, picks up 4 wins, comes back at 10-2. The UFC may give him another shot, but great work to Luis Jourdain, and we're going to have another brothers duo in the UFC. Let's have two brothers fight on the same card, similar to how Gabriel Blomfim and Ishmael Blomfim were tearing it up. So good stuff for Luis Jourdain, and I always love to see the round 3 finishes. Then we got to the main event, Damian Pinas, Vitor Costa, and Damian Pinas looked frightening here. I mean, he put Vitor Costa out with no remorse. Good work. Really good work. I mean, a little TKO. It said TKO doctor stoppage. Why am I maybe thinking of the wrong fight here? I'm trying to remember how this fight ended, to be honest. I mean, what I'm thinking about, Damian Pinas put his lights out and just absolutely dominated, but what do I know? Middleweight division, I do think, actually, let me go back and refine this fight. Alrighty, we are back, and you know what? I completely remembered it. He hit him with a beautiful straight, and it put him out just flat on the mat, and he legit was laying there for so long, and he was covering his head, and I actually thought something happened to him. Yeah, it's crazy how I can watch a whole card one day, and I just can't remember what happens. I did watch Contender Series, but yeah, Damian Pinas put him out cold. I knew it. I knew I remembered him putting him out cold. I knew there was something about Damian Pinas, his name I remembered, but 8-1, 7 finishes. I mean, this guy, an absolute killer. As for Vitor Costa, he'll fall to 8-2. Still a decent record, but if you're getting put out your lights like that, wasn't looking not too good. Vitor Costa did look good, though. You know, I will say he has this very fun style where he's like waving his arms repeatedly over and over. And I thought he was looking pretty good, but once Pinas started getting some momentum, he clipped him out clean. So Damian Pinas, I think, will be good. He'll be a good addition to the middleweight division. I just think with this in particular, I don't know what it is about this episode. Some tell me the guys from this episode aren't going to just come in and just be absolute killers in the UFC. And that's just me. I don't really want to be too much of a hater, but I don't know. I've seen stuff on other episodes that makes me think, you know, these guys will be world champs. And then for these guys, kind of mediocre. So that's a little Dana White's Contender Series recap. This one was super easy to go over. I mean, it just, I don't know. Not much happened on this one. This one was kind of the duller episodes of the season, but that's why I just got followed up with some bangers, which is why I think 9.9 and 9.10 are going to be great ways to end the year. But the year is just getting started for another league in the NFL. And with our, actually, you know, we're almost a fourth of the way through the season. We are actually 25% of the way through the NFL season. Did you guys know that? Actually, if you include playoffs, I guess not. But for the regular season, we have another week of matchups. That is right. You have week 5 coming around, and we've been killing on picks, guys. We really, really have. I have been impressed with myself. Not to slam myself on the back or anything, but I mean, on the year, I'm 45-18. I am absolutely working everyone for picks. So, I mean, I'd lock in when I'm sharing my picks here, guys, because week 5 is here, and here is your NFL week 5 quick picks. Kicking us off, we head to Thursday Night Football, 49ers and Rams. What a game. What a game to open up. And I do think no matter if the 49ers are completely unhealthy, you know, they've lost Nick Bosa, they've lost George Kittle, they've lost Brandon Ayuk, they've lost Brock Purdy, this is still a team with Christian McCaffrey. This is still a very good team overall, and I don't think we can hate them for that whatsoever. Now, both teams are coming in 3-1. You know, the NFC West is a great division, but I really liked the Rams showing against the Colts as opposed to the 49ers losing to the Jaguars to start the year. Rams coming off of one win have a plus 19 point differential. 49ers technically are in first place. They have a plus 15 or plus 5 point differential, actually, for the NFC West. And you know, I would love to pick the 49ers on the road, but the Rams are -320 favorites. Their team is completely healthy, and Puka Nacua is looking to have himself a career year for year number 3. Give me the Rams all day, and dare I even say this could be my lock of the week. We do have 4 teams on a bye, which does kind of suck. I mean, actually, it really sucks because the Bears being on a bye and the Steelers hurts me in fantasy. So I'm really going to have to work out what to do here. But yeah, Rams over 49ers, that's just my personal problems. I just think when I look top to bottom, the Rams are a much better team. I don't even think in fantasy-wise I have any players playing in this. So what are the worries for me? Then we get into Sunday and we have another international game. I believe they're in London as my Minnesota Vikings travel to face the Browns. Or I guess they're also traveling now that I've said that. Browns, Vikings, you know, Vikings are 2-2. You know, they've started off the year, and just the Vikings are always in a weird game. They always have weird seasons. It doesn't even make sense. The fact they lost to the Steelers, oh, it really sucked. It really, really sucked. But for the Browns, you know, there's another team. They are coming off of a loss. They're 1-3. They've only put up 56 points for on the year. That is absurd. That is really absurd. The 0-4 Saints have scored 2 more touchdowns than them for total points if we're looking at it like that. So, Browns, they're also starting Dylan Gabriel. The Vikings, Carson Wentz, I believe, has been building some chemistry with this team. The Browns and Vikings defenses are both amazing. This is going to be a defensive battle. So, it's just going to come down to which offense is better. And I'm going to ride with the -200 Minnesota Vikings to get past the +170 Browns. Plus, I'm a Vikings fan. So, I mean, I do not even have to justify why I'm picking the Vikings. I just am. I just love them. And honestly, at the end of the day, I truly do believe they'll beat the Browns. But then again, I did pick them to beat the Steelers, and they didn't, which was very unfortunate. So that sucked. Next up, we get into our noon games. Raiders and Colts. Raiders are +240 at 1-3. Colts at 3-1 are -290. Yeah, Colts lost the first game of this season to the Rams. It was bad. Adonai Mitchell fumbling at the goal line wide open. Can't do that, buddy. Cannot do that for a team sporting a +40 point differential. I mean, that is rough. That is rough, gang. I really got to say. Colts are 2-0 at home as well. They've been playing great. And I just watched the Raiders lose to the Bears. Like, what were we doing? But I do think Ashton Gentry's picking up. I don't think the Colts defense will slow him down any such. But the Raiders are on a 3-game losing streak. They just haven't looked good. They really looked bad. And mind you, they were able to beat the Patriots to open the season. But that's the Patriots. Actually, we're going to revisit the Patriots in a second. But yeah, I'm going to go with the Colts here. I really liked what I've seen from the Colts. And if sometimes when a team loses their first game, they kind of spiral. I don't see a spiral here. I really don't. I will be rooting for Ashton Gentry on the Raiders. I'll be rooting for Jacoby Myers, Brock Bowers. For the Colts, you know, I can mess with a little Tyler Warren here and there, so that's why I could get behind. But Raiders and Colts, I'm going with the home team, the Colts. Then a 1-3 Giants taking on the 0-4 New Orleans Saints. And unfortunately for the Saints, the Giants have 2 of the most entertaining rookies currently coming in here in Cam Scadamo and Jackson Dart. Jackson Dart just overtook Russ for being the new starting QB, and this boy got motion. This boy got motion with the dance moves, with the way he plays. I mean, oh my goodness, Russ is never touching the field again. That's all I'm going to say. And mind you, Giants may be last in the NFC East with a 1-3 record, but I just don't really think it showcases, you know, this team. They've started off, lost to the Commanders, a perfectly healthy Commanders team, fresh off of their historic run last year. They then have what was the game of the year up until the Packers at Cowboys, against the Cowboys, taking them down to OT. And then they lost to the Chiefs 22-9, but they really played the Chiefs super close. Just beat the Chargers, who I did not see losing here. And guess who they're taking on? The 0-4 Saints. Yeah. Yeah, bye-bye Saints. I got the Giants pulling this one out, and by some miracle, the Giants are plus 105. So lock in your bets, boys. Giants are underdogs right now. And yeah, that's where we're going to be making our money this week, if anyone's making bets. Then next game up at noon, Cowboys and Jets. I'm expecting an offensive explosion here. I really am. If you have fantasy players, you know, maybe not a defense much so, but if you have George Pickens, if you have Javonte Williams, you have Dak Prescott, if you have Justin Fields, Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, start them in this game. I think it's going to be a firefight. I really do. I think that these teams are just going to have fun and just go off offensively. Now, Jets are 0-4 and are easily the best 0-4 team. Like, the fact that you have the Titans at 0-4 and the Saints, and then you have the Jets. Like, Jets have put up 90 points this year. They have 40 more than the two other 0-4 teams. So, Jets have been killing it, but with the Cowboys this year, I just sense something, man. I just said, you know, they're 1-2-1. They've had a weird start to the year, but they put up 114 points. Their defense is just the only thing stopping them, with, of course, the loss to the Bears, the loss to the Eagles, and the draw against the Packers. The defense has failed them, but overall, their offense can make up for it. So I am going to go with the Packers here. Minus 140, getting it done in New York. Now, the Jets are 0-2, both at home on the road, so we can't really see a difference there. But I will say, I think this Cowboys team, coming off of some momentum with a draw, I mean, you didn't win, but you did lose. So there's something about that. As for the Jets, they freaking lost. The Jets are always losing. It's pretty comical. So we're going with the Cowboys, but I am hoping Justin Fields has himself a day, because I think I'm starting him in two leagues. So Cowboys over Jets, that's my pick. Then the battle of the horses and the birds here. We got the Denver Broncos visiting the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Philadelphia Eagles are, of course, tied for being the best team in the league. Yeah, they're 4-0, plus 20-point differential. And they just sneak away with wins. I swear they do. Beat the Bucks by 6, beat the Rams by 7, beat the Chiefs by 3, beat the Cowboys by 4. They have been in close games. So I don't really know if they're going to blow out the Broncos. But of all their games this season, I would say the Broncos are one team I could see them blowing out. Broncos currently 2-2, third in the AFC West. Now, they are coming off a blowout win over the Bengals, only allowing 3 points. But, you know, the Vikings also blew them out, so that's not too saying. That's not saying much. But I do like this matchup overall. I have Jalen Hurts. I have Devontae Smith. You know what? Actually, screw this. We can lock in the Eagles right now. I'm not even going to give an explanation. I need Devontae Smith to cook the Denver Broncos. I need Devontae Smith to have a 33-point game, for goodness sakes. Come on, Devontae Smith. Pull it together. But yeah, even offensively, I think the Eagles are better than the Broncos, defensive-wise as well. I would like to see maybe Bo Nix cook the Eagles D. I wouldn't be too mad about it. But I'm looking at which team I see going to 5-0 first. Is it the Eagles? Is it the Bills? I'm going to go with the Eagles to move to 5-0. Now, continuing our noon games, Dolphins and Panthers. Now, is this on land or water? If it's in water, I'll pick a Dolphin, but if it's on land, I'll pick a Panther. No, Dolphins 1-3, Panthers 1-3. This is, I don't even know what to expect. You know, the Dolphins are just falling apart before our eyes, and it did make sense. There was at one point the Dolphins were going to be the next big team. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle were a dynamic duo. A-Chain and Mostert were killers, and Tua was playing MVP-level football, and now, you know, they're 1-3. They managed to get a win, but it was over the Jets, for goodness sakes. They beat the Jets, and then they almost choked in the fourth quarter. You almost saw Justin Fields' comeback being led. So Dolphins are also on the road, taking on a Panthers team, and unfortunately, we're going to mention the Ravens in a second, but I have to start Bryce Young this week in football. It was either Bryce Young or Carson Wentz, and I like Bryce Young's chances against the Dolphins D compared to Carson Wentz's chances against the Browns D. So the 1-3 Panthers, they may have gone 0-3 on the road, but they're 1-0 at home. You know what? Last time they were at home, they blew out the Falcons. Alrighty, and look at their losses here. The Cardinals, the Jags, the Patriots. These are underrated good teams. That's all I'm going to say. So we're going to go with the Panthers to beat the Dolphins. I like it. I really do. I really think this is a good upset pick. And plus, they're an underdog. They're an underdog. How about we parlay the Panthers and the, what other team did we say? The Giants. Panthers and Giants parlay coming in. And next up, Texans and Ravens will close out our noon slate. And if you haven't heard, my sweet, glorious BLM king, Lamar Jackson, is unfortunately hurt. He's hurt. I love you, Lamar. Please come back. Please. Ravens are also 1-3 to start the year. It hasn't been pretty. It really hasn't. The Ravens are struggling, and they're taking on a Texans team, which finally picked up a win. Finally got some momentum. 26-0 blowout of the Titans. Now, for this game, I think it's going to come down to, without Lamar, can this team thrive? And I do think overall this Ravens team is super good. They have a minus 2 point differential. They have 131 points for, but 133 points against. I mean, these guys are always in high scoring affairs. 38-30 to the Lions, 37-20 to the Chiefs, 41-17 to the Browns, 41-40 against the Bills, and that is where my pick with the Ravens lies. By the way, they're underdogs of this. They're at home. They've lost to the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Bills, all right? Those three teams are literally regarded as three of probably the top five teams that you have out here. You know, if we mix in the Eagles, there's another one, but Ravens as underdogs, I think it is an excellent pick. I really like it. And for the Texans, let's not act like their only win is over the Titans, who are easily the worst team in the league. So, Lamar, if you can start, I'll really like your odds. But even if Cooper Rush is behind the helm, with Derrick Henry running it, with weapons like Rashad Bateman, Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews, you have options. Give me the Ravens over the Texans. Now, speaking of the Titans, kicking off our 3:05 slate, Titans visit the Cardinals. And if you have a pick 'em, if you need a lock of the week, it's the -425 Cardinals over the +330 Titans. Now, this being just a football world, I would just throw, if you have 100 extra bucks, throw it on the Titans. There's always a chance they could win, but they're 0-4. They have 51 points for, 120 points against them. They already have a -69 point differential to start the year. I've actually never heard of that heading into week 4. And the Cardinals, they have just been in some close games. You know, they're 2-2, bottom of the NFC West, but they have a positive point differential. And plus, you know, they almost made the comeback on the Seahawks. They unfortunately gave up a comeback to the 49ers. They almost lost a comeback to the Panthers. Wait, they actually almost lost a comeback to the Saints. Okay, so the Cardinals have been in 4 close games to start the year. Their only losses are to divisional rivals, 49ers and Seahawks, on game-winning field goals. I do think that is interesting. But yeah, you can lock in the Cardinals here. Their offense overall is looking good. Now, they don't have James Conner or Trey Benson, so in comes Michael Carter and Amari Demarcado. But you got Kyler Murray healthy, you got Marvin Harrison Jr. healthy, and you got Trey McBride. The Titans, they got a struggling Cam Ward, who really, it's not really Cam Ward's fault. If you put Cam Ward in with a Chiefs-like system, he would probably be the next Patrick Mahomes for all I care. But Titans really have no one. Tajay Spears is out. Tony Pollard is just so mediocre. Give me the Cardinals over the Titans. Then next up, here is what I think is going to be one of the best games of this week. It might even be Zachary's game of the week, the Buccaneers visiting the Seahawks. This is going to be so much fun. The Bucs are coming in 3-1, the best team in the NFC South. They are killing it, and they have a 97 points for and a 97 points against. You can't make that up. This team overall is looking pretty good. Mike Evans may be coming back soon, but Mika Egbuka has been killing it. Bucky Irving may be out, but Rashad White is a backup. He is honestly a pretty good backup, if you ask me. For the Seahawks, though, on the other hand, 3-1 as well. 3-game winning streak. They have also gone to, they've gone 2-0 at all on the road. So, maybe the Buccaneers actually could find some momentum playing on the road if the Seahawks lost one of their games at home. Seahawks, who did they lose to? They beat the Cardinals, beat the Saints, beat the Steelers. They lost the 49ers at home. Okay, that's not that bad. For the Bucs, you know, they almost beat the Eagles to give them some credit. But the Seahawks, Kenneth Walker is extra, it's such a good backfield. You got JSN out there. You've got a lot of weapons overall. There's a lot of players on this team that were catching passes that weren't Jackson Smith and Jigba, and I was like, just pass the JSN. Why are we passing to anyone else? And Sam Darnold is finally getting some chemistry. But Buccaneers, 65% of people have picked them. Wow, I do like them as an underdog here, but something tells me the Seahawks are going to continue getting some motion and that the Buccaneers are going to lose here and they're just going to go on a little skid. So give me the Seahawks to pull this one away. If I've been picking too many home teams. I kind of have been, but this is where we mix it up, guys. Because next up, it's the Lions and the Bengals. Lions are minus 850. Bengals are plus 425. You can lock in your Lions right here. There's not much more I need to say. They're 3-1. They are so dominant. And this Bengals team, I genuinely don't know if they're going to win another game. They look so lost. They since losing Joe Burrow, they haven't known what to do. It's been bad. Such a waste for Ja'Marr Chase. Chase Brown hasn't been able to find his footing as well. Poor Chase is overall. And for the Lions, like, this team is 100% healthy. The defense is clicking. The offense is clicking. It's Lions all day. I don't even need to explain myself whatsoever. Rounding out 3:30 slate, Commanders and Chargers. And you may be getting Jane Daniels back, which would be very, very helpful. But the Chargers, like, really, I have no idea how they lost to the Giants. I do think it was a bit of home luck, you know? So the Chargers being back at home is going to benefit them, you know, the home luck in terms of for the Giants. For the Commanders, I do think that with the... They're also 0-2 on the road to start the year. I do think with Jane Daniels coming back, if he doesn't play, if he does play, he may be a bit more, hesitant to make big plays. So I really do like the Chargers here, but if we're looking at road teams, you know, I kind of like Commanders over the Chargers. But I am going to ride with the Chargers here, because I also have Quentin Johnson, who I really need to go out for like 40 points or something. I know it's in him. I know a Quentin Johnson 40 bomb is there. It can happen. Herbo just needs to lock in and pass to him over and over and over. And with that, we get into our two final matchups of the week. Sunday Night Football, the Patriots, the surprisingly good Patriots, taking on the 4-0 Buffalo Bills. And at first glance, Patriots plus 340, Bills minus 450. You know, it's looking like a blowout for the Bills. Bills are also 4-0, plus 43 point differential, 3-0 at home. They've been killing it. But what you fail to know if you're not an avid football watcher is the Patriots and Bills always split. They always split. I swear, every single year, the Patriots and Bills split. And we're at, you know, the Patriots coming in, you know, 2-2. You know, they do have a plus 21 point differential. But they're coming in with some positive momentum, a blowout over the Panthers, and I don't know, so this is screaming upset at me. This is screaming upset. I think statistically, I have to pick the Bills. Like, there's no real warning signs that the Bills are fading at all, but I mean, the Patriots are such an appetizing pick. They really are. They really look like the right choice here, if you ask me. And, you know, to be fair, they haven't really gone like a... They beat the Jets by 20, but 10 points to the Dolphins, 12 points to the Saints. You know, they've been playing teams pretty close. And honestly, gang, I don't care. We're going with the Patriots to get this one done. I'm going with the Patriots to beat the Bills. This is my upset pick of the week. There's bound to be an upset. There's an upset every single week, and it's the Bills and the Patriots. No one's going to see this coming. 97% of people are picking the Bills. Only 3% are picking the Patriots. The biggest discrepancy of this week, and we're riding with Drake May, Hunter Henry, and Travion Henderson. I guess even when you say the roster out loud, it's nowhere near as good as the Bills. But Patriots over Bills, is it a bad pick? No, it's the right pick. Then we get into our Monday Night Football. I miss the doubleheaders. I actually really like the doubleheaders. A Monday Night Football, Chiefs taking on the Jags. And yeah, you know, I would really love to pick the Jags here at 3-1. Wow, how are the Jaguars 3-1? Since when did the Jaguars get to 3-1? Two-game winning streak. Snuck past the 49ers, snuck past the Texans, lost to the Bengals, blow out the Panthers 26-10. Now, I will say this defense has been good. Jaguars defense has been a saving grace for this team, but I will reference the Giants game for the Chiefs. You know, the Giants defense was holding the Chiefs, but in the end, they broke. You know, for the Jags, I'd really like to see some good performances from Travis Hunter, from Brian Thomas Jr., but the reason I can't really ask them for it is because you need Trevor Lawrence to step it up. Trevor Lawrence has forgotten. He used to be undefeated. He was a Clemson legend. He was a killer in college, and I just feel like he hasn't found his footing here in the NFL, and as much as the Jaguars would be a fun underdog pick, you know, I think this Chiefs team, they're only getting better. Rashee Rice will be back next week. You know, overall, they're still the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, I think they're a fraudulent 2-2, you know, in terms of I think they should be better off. But they're on a two-game winning streak. Their losses are to the Eagles and the Chargers, for goodness sakes. I mean, Super Bowl rematch, a divisional rival they always split with. And after a blowout of the, after a point of 37 on the freaking Ravens, I think they're going to have some momentum. So, Chiefs over the Jags, and I'm going to say it's 32-7, 37 total points scored. Maybe I'll you don't get this correct. But yeah, boys, we got some upset picks here. That, you know, that's how we roll. You know I love my upset picks. That's what makes it fun, all right? You got to go with upset picks. And I think I have a good split between home teams, away teams, and, you know, I might have been sucked in by a lot of these underdogs. But, hey, I'm actually 85,000th in the world. I'm in the top 85K for picks on the ESPN app. The 93% pointile, all right? That's how good percentile. That's how good I am at making picks. But, yeah, guys, let me know who you guys are riding with. It should be a good week. I really do expect good things of the NFL season. At the end of the day, I will be rooting especially for the Minnesota Vikings. Come on, Vikings, get it done. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, that's enough talk in the NFL. That's enough talk of guys who aren't even in the UFC. Let's talk about some guys who are in the UFC and who are fighting this weekend at another UFC pay-per-view. It's been over a month. You know, we didn't have a pay-per-view in September, for goodness sakes, but now we have October here. October's firing on all cylinders. We get two pay-per-views. We get two fight nights on the road. This is going to be fantastic, and we're going to be kicking things off with none other than UFC 320. I'm so buzzing for this. UFC 320 is going to be exciting. It's going to be good, and we have 14 fights to talk about with you guys today. We have way too many fights, but is there such thing as too many fights? I don't know. Let's get right on into it with our first fight. Kicking off the card, and might I just add, this fight just doesn't feel like it's UFC 320 worthy. Like, I have no idea why this is even on the card. I'm not trying to be a hater, like I've been saying all episode, but I mean, women's flyweight division, Veronica Hardy taking on Brogan the Bear Walker. I'm honestly surprised both these women are still in the UFC. Veronica -600, big favorite over the +400 Brogan Walker. So I could easily mess with an upset pick here right off the bat, since both these women are not coming in with positive momentum. Veronica Hardy is 9-5-1. Brogan Walker is 8-4. 5'4" is the same height for both ladies. 3 inches in reach for Brogan Walker. 67-64 is an advantage there. Southpaw for Hardy. Switch stance for Brogan Walker. We'll start with Veronica. Big favorite here. 29 years old from Venezuela, now fights and lives and trains out of England. Of her 9 wins, she has 3 finishes, 1 KO and 2 subs. Of her 5 defeats, she's been finished twice, and she has gone 4-5 in the UFC as she makes her 10th appearance here. She had a stint from 2016 to 2020 going 1-4. You know, got finished twice and actually got a finish in 2019, and then returned in 2023, went on a little 3-fight win streak, all of them decisions, and then lost to Eduardo Mora at the end of 2024. So Veronica Hardy hasn't done much. You know, there literally isn't much appeal with her as a fighter, but hey, 29, I guess she's, she's 3-2. Actually, she's 3-1 in her last 4 fights in the UFC. I guess we can look at it like that. But yeah, Veronica Hardy coming in, got grappled to death last time. Actually, not too badly. Taken down 3 or 4 times for 4 minutes of control time. 1-3 in that fight she had against Eduardo Mora back in 2024. But yeah, Veronica Hardy coming in is what is. Like, there's really not much I can say about her if I'm trying to be polite, which I am trying to be polite. She takes on Brogan Walker, 36 years old, born in California, but now actually lives and trains out of Guam. Oddly enough, of her 8 wins, 1 sub. Of her 4 defeats, 1 time she's been KO'd. That is right. She's a decision machine. She's 0-2 in the UFC. She lost the Ultimate Fighter back in 2022, getting TKO'd in round 3 by Juliana Miller, and then fought Yasmin Lucindo in April of 2023, which means she hasn't fought in almost 2.5 years. So yeah, it's been a while since Brogan Walker last fought. I'm going to just give strength the schedule. I'm going to give the fact she's my 600 favorite just a bone, and I'm going to give this win to Veronica Hardy, probably by decision. And you know what? I could really care less who wins this at the end of the day. Moving on, we head to the men's welterweight division as we have Ramiz Brahmaj taking on the gentleman, Austin Vanderford. Ramiz coming in 12-5. Austin is 13-2. 5'11 to 5'10, 1 inch in height for Austin, and 2 inches in reach for Austin. Give him a little advantage there. Orthodox stance for both men. Austin is a -250 favorite. Ramiz is coming in at +200. I love this fight. I think this is a super fun, super exciting fight top to bottom. And stylistically, I'm very curious to see how this one goes. Ramiz Brahimaj coming in is 32 years old, born in New York, but now trains out of Texas at Travis Luter BJJ, same gym as Kevin Holland. Of his 12 wins, 1 KO and 11 subs. That's right, he has a 100% finish rate. Of his 5 defeats, he's only ever been KO'd once, and it was by Max Griffin with a round 3 elbow back in 2020. Since that fight, he's gone 4-2 in the UFC, and like I said, all of his wins have came in round one. All of them have came by finish. He had one KO of Mickey Gall last year, but other than that, everything else is by submission. Currently rides a 2-fight winning streak where he submitted Billy Ray Goff back in May in 3 minutes, and he's gotten a 50K performance bonus in his last 2 wins, so not too bad. Ramiz Brahimaj, last loss was to Themba Gorimbo back in May of 2024. So Ramiz looking to keep the momentum up, looking to keep dominating as he takes on Austin Vanderford. Austin Vanderford, 35 years old from Alaska, but now lives and trains out of Florida. Currently rides a 2-fight winning streak, and of his 13 wins has 8 finishes, 5 KOs and 3 subs. Both of his 2 defeats came by KO, and you know what? He's pretty good. He's more so known as Paige VanZant's husband, I will say, over anything. He actually is 5-2 in Bellator, which is where he came from. He did pick up a round 2 submission on season 2 of Damas Quintero's series 7 years ago, but did not get a contract. He was given an opportunity to take on Nikolai Veritaninov in February in Seattle and TKO'd him in round number 2. So, you know what? 2-fight winning streak overall. I guess in the UFC, if we're including Damas Quintero series, he's 2-0. Which is weird to think about, but yeah, dominated Nicola, 39 significant strikes to 5, grappled him in both rounds, landed some good ground and pound, and yeah, he's looking to bring that momentum into this one with Ramiz Brahimaj. Both these guys are finishers, both are going to be coming in hungry to get it done, but I'm really leaning Austin Vanderford here. I mean, just watching how much he dominated Nicola, seeing how he's only really lost to tough competition outside of the UFC for his 2 defeats, I really do like Austin Vanderford in this one, but Ramiz is not going to make it easy. Ramiz is super tough, super well-rounded, super grounded, and I do think Ramiz will provide an interesting challenge. So, Austin, Ramiz, keep your eyes on that one. Should be a good one on the UFC 320 prelims. Speaking of, the man Austin beat in his debut, Punahele Puna Soriano takes on Nicola Veritaninov. Punahele 11-4, Nicola 13-6, 6'1" to 5'11", a bit of height for Nicola and a bit of reach, 74-72, southpaw for Soriano, orthodox for Nicola. And yeah, Punahele is the favorite coming in at -220, Nicola at +180 is the underdog. Punahele Soriano is 32 years old from Hawaii. He trains out of Extreme Couture though in Las Vegas. Currently on a little streak here, you know, was able to get back in the win column last June and since 1-2 straight. He has 7 KOs and 2 subs of his 11 wins, and of his 4 defeats, he's been finished twice. He's gone 5-4 in the UFC, and it's weird to think he's been with the UFC. This on, you know, comes in, gets 2 great knockouts, you know, in round 1, and then gets grappled to death against Brendan Allen and Nick Maximov. Actually, the Brendan Allen one was more so striking. The Nick Maximov one, he got taken down 11 times. It was rough. He then followed that up with a knockout of Dulce Luchambula before getting knocked out by Roman Kopilov. He would end 2023 getting submitted by Dustin Stolfus before bouncing back with a unanimous decision victory in 2024. He would fight on the first card of the year in January this year and get a 31-second knockout of Euros Medic. So, Punahele coming in with some momentum. He doesn't do well against grappling, and he's beaten some lower-level welterweights to get to this spot. So we'll see how he does when he takes on Nicola Veritaninov, 35 years old, born in Kazakhstan, but now is fighting out of Kings MMA in California. He went 3-0 after losing on Season 5 of Dana White's Contender Series to Michael Morales, who, for goodness sakes, couldn't put him away. And, yeah, you know, he has 9 KOs and 1 sub of his 13 wins, and of his 6 defeats, he's been finished 3 times. Came into the UFC in 2024 and lost to Danny Barlow by split decision. Then, of course, got TKO'd by Austin Vanderford and then lost a split decision to won a split decision or Francisco Prado at UFC 318. So Nicola has had a very interesting run. into the UFC. I think this is a winnable fight for him, but I have seen too many holes in his game plan to not think Puttehelly could put him out there. Francisco Prado would have just put together a great striking game plan. He could have gotten him out of there. So I hate to keep riding with favorites to open the card. I do like all the underdogs as well that we've started off the night with, but going with Puttehelly Soriano, I've seen a lot of good stuff from him as of late, and I do think he can get this one done. Now, moving down to bantamweight, as we have the return of No Love, Patchy Mix. He'll be taking on the debuting Jacob Wicklocks. That is right. And you may be like, Jacob Wicklocks, oh, is he another ranked opponent since we gave, Patchy Mix to the freaking number 8 guy in his debut? Well, no. Jacob Wicklocks is actually coming over from another promotion. But Patchy Mix, 20-2. Jacob, 16-3-2. They both have some stellar records. And as for stance, southpaw for Patchy, orthodox for Jacob, same height, same reach. These two are fairly similar in size. Patchy is the minus 250 favorite. Jacob is the plus 200 underdog. Patchy Mix, 32 years old from New York, but now trains out of Las Vegas. So I guess he's technically the hometown favorite. Of his 20 wins, 15 finishes, 2 KOs, and 13 subs. He went an outstanding 9-1 in Bellator before transitioning to the UFC back at UFC 316 in June, where he lost to Mario Bautista. Did nothing. Literally did nothing. I think Sal D'Amato gave him maybe round 2. That was about it. I mean, this man did absorb 173 significant strikes against Mario Bautista. Kind of ate them. Can't even lie. He kind of ate those shots. So Patchy Mix coming in. He's much more known as a submission guy. He had a lot of hype coming in. That was stopped. Will he be similar to Patricio Pitbull, who followed up his very bad debut with a victory? We'll see when he takes on Jacob Wicklocks. Jacob is 29 years old from Poland and currently rides a 6-fight winning streak. He trains at Jerzani Smok, the same gym as Mateusz Gamrot in Poland. Of his 16 victories, he has 10 submissions. And I have another note here. All of his losses, he's been finished in. His last win came in June, and he had a insane pentology, all right? He had a pentology with some guy. He fought a guy 5 freaking times outside the UFC, going 2 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw, and a no cut. And I think that's crazy. Actually, they might have had 2 draws. Or it might have been 3 times. I don't know, but he fought a guy 5 times, and he actually fought him the last 2 times coming into the UFC. But he was a KWS champion. He really seems like a good fighter, but I'm going to back Patchy Mix here. I really do. Patchy Mix was just too good outside the UFC. He was too good in Bellator to just come into the UFC and just lose to anyone. And the fact we're going from Mario Bautista to a guy making his debut says a lot about what the UFC thinks of Patchy Mix. And I think Patchy has to make them double think what they're doing here. And I'm going to have him win by submission. And by the way, all of Jacob's losses are by sub. He loves the hunt for subs too. So maybe Patchy will get his 3rd career knockout here and put him out of there. But I don't know Jacob Wicklocks that well. We'll see how he looks when he gets in the UFC. But I am going to ride with the man I did see once before. That is Patchy Mix, which he was just so talky. Like, I'm going to put Mario Bautista out of there, and then froze up. Not the biggest. I don't even know what his excuse was. He's like, I just got nervous. Yeah, that's not going to cut it, Patchy. Rebound here, Mix, and we'll see how you do. Then we get some top 10 fighters here. That's right, in the most action-packed division in the UFC, as the number 5 ranked women's bantamweight Macy Trison takes on the number 10 ranked Yana Santos. That's right, ranked women's bantamweight action. Yay, yay. Yeah, we can hear all the groans from the crowd when this fight is going to be coming up next. But Macy Trison coming in this one, minus 225 is the favorite. Yana Santos at plus 185 is the underdog. Macy 11-4, Yana 16-8 with a no contest. 5 inches in height for Macy Trison and 4 inches in reach for her is where the advantage lies. They both stand in the orthodox fighting position. You know what? There's only 1 year in age separating these two. We'll start with Macy Trison here. I was going to start with Yana. Let's start with Macy Trison. Macy could have been fighting for a title pretty soon here. I mean, kid, you're not 34 years old from New Orleans. Shame they couldn't get her on the card earlier this year. Now fights out of Dallas. Of her 11 wins, she has 6 finishes, 3 KOs and 3 subs. Out of her 4 defeats, she's been finished twice. She's gotten 8-4 in the UFC, so she has a pretty stellar UFC record. And it's crazy to think she came in at 3-0 when she won the Ultimate Fighter. She beat Pongyanza to win the Ultimate Fighter. How about that? Would follow that up with two straight finishes before running into Lena Landsberg, losing a decision, pick up two more wins, get submitted by Raquel Pennington, beat Norma Dumont in a close split decision. I thought Norma won that one, but oh well. Got up kick knocked out to the stomach from Irene Aldana. Anyone remember that from UFC 279? And followed it up with two finishes in 2024 after taking a year and a half off before running into Ketlin Vieira earlier this year, who would beat her in one of the most boring fights I've ever witnessed. Ketlin Vieira didn't even land a takedown. Macy Chison failed a takedown every round and got controlled. I mean, it was one of the most worst things I've ever seen. It was so boring. But Macy, she's back. She has the ultimate Karen haircut, and she's taking on Thiago Santos' wife. Do we all remember Thiago Santos? Yes, his wife is Russian Yana Santos. 35 years old from St. Petersburg. She has 7 KOs and 1 sub out of her 16 career victories, if you want to put it like that. Of her 8 defeats, she has been finished 5 times, 3 by KO. She's gone 6-5 in the UFC, and it's crazy to think she debuted fighting Chris Cyborg for the Women's Featherweight Championship. I mean, what world were we living in? In 2018, she would win 2 fights, get TKO'd in round 3 by Aspen Ladd, win 2 more decisions, and then actually she beat Ketlin Vieira, which is super weird to think, 2021. She would then go on a 3-fight losing skid, getting knocked out by Irene Aldana, dropping decisions to Holly Holmes and Carol Rosa before finally turning her luck around, beating Chelsea Chandler in August of last year and beating Misha Tate in Iowa this year. I did not see that one coming. Yana Santos dominating Misha Tate, but she did look. Look, this is boring, this is dull, but I think that Macy Chison is better stylistically than Leona Santos, and I can see a ground-and-pound TKO here. I really can. I'm going with Macy Chison here. I hate that I'm picking all the favorites, but like genuinely, I just don't think Yana Santos is going to be able to hang. You know, Macy Chison, and let's not act like Macy Chison isn't ranked number 5 for no reason. She's picked up some wins along the way, so women's bantamweight action, we'll see how it goes. Luckily, guys, no more women's fights from here, because next up, we go on a run from here. Every fight from here is going to be awesome as we head to the featherweight division. Daniel Willie Cat Santos takes on Jusang Zombie Jr. U. He is back. He is hungry. Do I even need to go over this? Because you already know my prediction here. Daniel Santos, 13-2. Jusang U, 9-0. Undefeated. Daniel Santos is somehow the favorite at -135. Jusang U +110. What do the odds makers know? Both men are 5'7", 4 inches in reach. For Jusang U, 71-67 inches, and an orthodox stance for both men. Means they are pretty stylistically close. The favorite, Daniel Santos, is 30 years old from Brazil and trains at the same gym as Charles Oliveira, Shootbox Diego Lima, whatever it is. Of his 13 wins, 7 finishes, 5 KOs, and 2 subs. Of his 2 defeats, they have both been by decision. He was actually supposed to fight in Perth, but that fight got canceled, so he hasn't fought since May, currently rides a 3-fight winning streak, and was able to get a knockout in 2022, last time he got a finish. This man has had 7 canceled bouts in the UFC. This man is notorious for not showing up on fight day, but he did detour a fellow South Korean of Jusang U earlier this year in May and Jiyoung Lee, which really hurt. I really thought that Jiyoung Lee was going to get that one done, but it is what it is. Daniel Santos rides the 3-5 win streak, coming in with some momentum, but he's taking on a man who had one of the best KOs of the year so far. Jusang U, 31 from South Korea, of his 9 wins, 5 finishes, 4 KOs, and 1 sub, and his knockout of Jekka Saragai was amazing. Back at UFC 316, 28 seconds in, clips him with a hook, and Jekka literally turns into a board on his feet and just face plants. And then a lasty, just one more hook onto the ground, and he was already out. Jusang U, if he brings that same energy in here, Daniel Santos won't make it out of round 1. So, is Jusang U just fighting a guy in Jekka Saragai who has no chin? Maybe, but I'm going to go under the assumption that he's an absolute savage. He's also the underdog, and we need to pick underdogs. Give me Jusang U round 1 knockout. Daniel Santos, you are not ready for this South Korean. He ain't no Jiyoung Lee. This is Jusang U. Give him to me all day. My lock of the night? Absolutely not. Next up, bantamweight division. Chris El Guapo Gutierrez is finally back. Can you believe it? As he takes on the undefeated Fareed Ferocious Basharat. Chris is 22-6 with 2 draws. Fareed, 13-0. 5'9-5'8, pretty similar in height. And 71 inches to 67 inches is a 4-inch reach advantage for Fareed. So despite being 1 inch less in height, he's got 4 inches in reach. Orthodox stance for both of our gentlemen. Fareed, -400. Chris Gutierrez is +300. I mean, come on, man. Come on, what happened, Chris? At one time, you were always the favorite. Now, you're the underdog. Let's start with Fareed Basharat here, the undefeated man. Coming in, 28 years old, born in Afghanistan, now fights out of Las Vegas, so I guess he is technically the hometown guy here, since UFC 320 is in Las Vegas. Fights out of American Top Team, pretty good gym. 50% of his victories are by finish, 1 KO and 6 subs. And you know what? He's done pretty good in the UFC. You know, nothing too exciting, I'll say. Won on Season 6 of Dana White's Contender Series, decision. Fought Damon Blackshear in his debut, decision. Fought Cledson Rodriguez in Paris 2 years ago, got the sub. Fought Taylor Lapalus to start off 2024, beat him by decision. Then fought the undefeated at the time, Victor Hugo. Or actually, I think Victor, he was just on like a 16-fight win streak. That was back in October, and he beat him by decision. So Fried hasn't necessarily done anything impactful, but he's 13-0, and he's fought in some pretty good competition for being unranked, if you ask me. And one win here. I mean, we can get this guy in the rankings just like that. I mean, I could have him fight Kyler Phillips, Rob Font, Marcus McGee. One win could change your life, Fareed. But this is the toughest test of his career as he takes on El Guapo, Chris Gutierrez. 6 years older at 34, born in Texas, now fights out of Denver, Colorado. 10 of his 22 wins are by finish, 9 KOs and 1 sub of his 6 defeats. He's only ever been submitted once. He's gone 10-3-1 in the UFC since joining in 2018, where he got submitted by Raoni Barcelos in his debut. He would follow that up with 3 wins, a draw, then 4 wins, giving him an 8-fight unbeaten streak, including retiring Frankie Edgar with a nasty knee. He would then take on Pedro Munhoz, who would beat him in UFC Vegas something? I can't remember. Oh, it was UFC Kansas. That was back in 2023. He would follow that up with a win over Alatenge, then lose to Song Yedong in main event, then fight Quang Lee on short notice, beat him, then fight John Castaneda in his featherweight debut, and beat him. That was back in, actually at UFC Kansas City. This man has gone 2-0 at UFC Kansas City. Or actually, he's gone 1-1 at UFC Kansas City. Something about UFC Kansas City leaping out to me about Chris Gutierrez. But look, he looked good against John Castaneda. Did what he had to do, I will say. In that fight, he kind of won round one, lost round two, and then really lost round three. But round two, I guess, went to him based on some striking. So Chris Gutierrez slimed himself out of the victory there. But I think you're going to see Fareed Bashrat grapple this man to death. It has been the year of undefeated fighters losing. I will note that, but I got Fareed Bashrat grappling Chris Gutierrez until he can't breathe anymore. That's what I got going down on the prelims. And then, second to last prelim here, Edmund Shahbazyan, the golden boy, back in the men's middleweight division as he takes on Sergi Pano, Andre Munhoz. Sergi Pano must be some Brazilian thing. Edmund coming in -275, Andre Munhoz +215. By the way, Andre is a good underdog here, in case you're curious on someone I'd pick. But Edmund is 15-5. Andre is 24-7. 6'2-6'1. Tall boys. One tonight for Edmund. 78 inches, 75, 3 inches of reach for Andre. Southpaw for Munhoz. Orthodox for the golden boy, Edmund Shahbazyan. Edmund, 27 years young, from Las Vegas. Fights out of Extreme Couture. So we'll see if teammates can win. Winning Punelli Soriano, he fights out of Extreme Couture. 12 KOs and 1 sub give him 13. Up 15 wins by finish. That's nice to see. But of his 5 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. This man has gone 8-5 in his 13 fights in the UFC. And if you're wondering, yes, he did debut when he was 20 years old. Got a 40-second knockout on the Contender Series. Absolute legend. We then start out his UFC run 4-0 with 3 round 1 knockouts, including a nasty one of Brad Tavares at UFC 244. Unfortunately, he would run into prime Derek Brunson, would run into Jack Hermanson, who beat him, would run into Nazanin Imavov, and be 0-3 on the verge of being cut. He would then fight Dulce Luciambula, who he would knock out in round 2, keeping himself in the UFC. He would then get absolutely massacred by Anthony Hernandez in 2023. With his career on the line, he gets another round one knockout of AJ Dobson. And then, after being up 2 rounds, or basically a round and a half, he gets submitted by Jerome Mearshart. Son of a gun. That was August 2024. But 2025, he's gone 2-0, a minute 35-second knockout of Dylan Buca, and a dominant decision win over Andre Pachowski at UFC Atlanta. Edmund is back. Edmund is hungry, and he looks to go 3-0 in 2025 and extend his win streak to 3 straight. But he takes on a man who fights the style that Edmund is not good at, which is grappling, in Andre Munhoz. Andre Munhoz, 35 years old, from Brazil. 4 KOs and 15 subs give him 19 of 24 wins by finish. We love to see finishers. I'll say that. And all 7 of his losses have been by finish, including 6 by knockout. Yeah, this man is this man doesn't have a chin at times. But Edmund, -275. Munhoz, +215. Good underdog here, if you ask me. This man fought twice on the Contender Series. It was the second attempt on Season 3 in 2019, which got him in. He would start out his UFC run 5-0 with 3 arm bars, breaking Eric Anders and Jacare Souza's arms before finally getting the biggest win of his career over Uriah Hall. He would then get a fight night main event against Brendan Allen, who would submit him in round number 3. He would follow that up, getting TKO'd by Paul Craig in 2023. He would then win a split decision over Jun Young Park in December of 2023 before having a full year off, you know. Came back a year and a half later, fought Ikram Akhachev earlier this year in Kansas City. What do you know, Chris? And got knocked out with 6 seconds left. So, if you ask me, the grappling for Andre Munoz is what's going to win him this fight. But I'll tell you why he's going to lose, and that's because he doesn't have a chin, and Edmund's coming in, and Edmund Shabazian's going to knock out Andre Munoz. I got him. I got Edmund Shabazian all day. Give him his 13th career knockout here. I am always been a fan of Edmund Shabazian. You know, I rode with him throughout all of his win streaks. I've never not picked him to win a UFC fight, I think. I mean, look, I just think the striking-wise that if he can defend takedowns from Andre Munoz, he will get this done. And one benefit is, like, size-wise, they're both similar. You know, you get a bit of reach for Munoz, but I don't think that will affect him. So, Edmund over Munoz should be exciting and should be a round one knockout. And speaking of round one knockouts, the headliner as of right now for the middleweight prelims, they might switch this around by fight night, but this is the current UFC stats bout order. We have this silent assassin, the absolute maniac, the scariest fighter rising right now in Ataba the Silent Assassin Gutier, taking on a man on short notice, Trusted TV Time Vines. Oh, Trusted, my sweet. Don't even have odds for this out. This fight was made today. It's October 1st. This was made 3 days before the fight's actually going to take place. So props to Trusted. Really props to him. He's gonna get his money. They're going to pay this man. But Ataba Gutier, he is 4 inches taller. He has a 7-inch reach advantage. He's fights in the switch stance. Trusted fights orthodox. And Ataba Gutier is 23 years young. Born in Cameroon, rides a 7-fight win streak. Of his 8 wins, 7 KOs. By the way, his last 7 wins have all came by KO, and 6 of those have been in round number 1. This man's a maniac. Season A of Dana White's Contender Series, got a knockout. Good work, my boy. Debuted in March of this year, round 1 knockout. Fought again at UFC 318, round 1 knockout. And in both fights, Jose Medina and Robert Valentine, they get rocked by this dude, and then tell him to, like, come on. They give him, like, the irking with his hands on, and this boy just unloads with them, put them both out cold. The tape got here. Is one of the hottest rising prospects, wasn't even on my radar this year, and now I'm so excited to watch him fight. He was originally supposed to fight Ozzy Diaz, and Ozzy pulled out because Ozzy knew he wasn't going to win. So shout out to Trustin Vines, who is going to be a massive underdog. Trustin Vines is going to be the biggest underdog on the card when the odds drop for this. I'm sure right now you can even see it's probably minus 500 to plus 500. It's going to be ridiculous, and Trustin Vines, all I can do is pray for you, but hey. Trustin, he's 29 years old from Alabama. He's on a 4-fight winning streak of his 10 wins, 6 KOs, 1 sub. His last win was in August 30th, to be specific, actually. But the one thing is that this man has 3 losses, and he's been put out cold by knockout in all 3. So I actually just saw a clip on Twitter today, and it was showing him the last time he lost to Raheem Forrest, who, by the way, fought on Dana's Contender Series 2 years ago. And this man was just slumped. This man was slumped out cold with a straight. And Ataba Gutier is about to do some nasty things. So will Trusted Vines pull off the ultimate offset? I don't know. But I mean, Ataba Gutier all day. I'm so glad I was able to wait for this fight to be made to actually put it down in my official predictions. Because, yeah, Gutier is probably my lock of the night. I'll say it right now. Gutier is my lock of the night. I do not see this guy losing. Oh, yeah, this is going to be a bloodbath, if you ask me. But let's get into the main card, because this main card is worth the money. You know, obviously the UFC is overpriced, so we have to analyze it from the fact if you would be paying any form of money, would this be worth it? And let's say you're paying a reasonable amount, because I really don't believe that what they offer now, like, I don't know what, they would have to offer three championship fights and 2 really good fights to actually be worth the $85-$90 it costs. But if you're actually someone who thinks, like, oh, like, is this worth paying for? If I, like, there's no way I can't find another place to watch it, I'd say this is a card that's probably worth it, as we have 5 fights here that are all phenomenal. First up, middleweight division, Abus Magomedov and Joe Piper. Be Joe Piper. That is, this is gonna be a good one, guys. This is going to be an exciting one. Abus is coming in 28-6 with one draw. Joe Body Bags Piper 14-3. Both men are 6'2", 3 inches in reach for Abus, 78-75. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Joe Piper -220. Abus, a nice little underdog at +180. You know, I don't hate him as an underdog. If I'm being honest, I could ride with him. But Joe Piper coming in, you know him, you love him. 29 years old from Pennsylvania. Actually, some people hate him. Fun fact, some people don't like Joe Piper. He's gone 5-1 in the UFC, and 12 of his 14 wins are by finish, 9 KOs and 3 subs. And you know what? This man's been on a tear. This man has been on a tear since coming in. He's just taking over. You know, obviously season 6, he broke out with the B Joe Piper, the only good performance on that season. He followed it up with a round 1 knockout, then another round 1 knockout, then a round 2 sub, then got a main event against Jack Hermanson, won the first 2, and then somehow lost the last 3. That one hurts, but came back June 2024, slept Marc-Andre Barraute in his only fight of this year at UFC 316 in June. He absolutely demolished Calvin Gastelum. But I have no idea how Calvin survived. To be honest, he was dropped twice in round 1, and then after that, Joe just kind of relented, didn't do much. Calvin actually pushed the pace a bit, but Calvin Gastelum always makes people fight in weird fights. I swear that's just how Calvin Gastelum fights. So, Joe Piper coming in. He brings insane knockout power that you got to be careful of. But he's taking on a guy who has dealt with some power in his day. And Abus Magomedov, 35 years old. Wow, 6 years older. Born in Dagestan, now fights out of Germany. Yeah, this boy's a Germany boy. 21 of his 28 wins are by finish, 14 KOs and 7 subs. Of his 6 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. And this man has gone 4-2 in the UFC. Won his debut in 2022 in 19 seconds. He would then have a main event in his next fight against Sean Strickland. And after clearly winning round 1, he would fade so hard. This man faded so hard in round 2. By the way, UFC Fight Night Strickland Magomedov, the first ever event we covered on the podcast. Can you believe that? I still can't believe that. But yeah, faded so hard, got TKO'd, followed it up, lost to Cal Barallo a couple months later. But then, May 2024... beats Walray Alvarez, October 2024, submits Bruno Ferreira, and in his earlier fight this year at UFC Kansas City. Why is every single fighter out here somehow fought at UFC Kansas City? He beat Michelle Pereira by unanimous decision. So, Abus coming in, 3-fight winning streak, but look, I'm a Joe Piper stan. I think Joe Piper just really needs, when he knocks one out, he needs to just lay it all out. All right, and what happened with Calvin Gastelum is he almost got him out there in round number 1 multiple times. It's almost like he got nervous that if he went in again, he'd get clipped. But I think Abus provides a challenge on the ground. But in terms of the feet, Joe has the power. Joe can bring the punches. And I think Joe Piper gets past Abus Magomedov to open up the main card of UFC 320. Moving on to the men's featherweight division. And I'm so happy to see this man fighting. Josh Emmett is back. That's right, the number 8 ranked featherweight is back to take on the number 9 ranked Yusuf Zalal, which I can't lie, Yusuf Zalal at 9 is a little high for only beating Calvin Kattar, but hey, we'll look past it. Josh CC0 Emmett, 19-5 professionally. Yusuf the Moroccan Devil Zalal, what a nickname, 17-5-1. 5'10 to 5'6, 4 inches in height for Yusuf, and 2 inches in reach as well. 72 to 70, switch stance for Zalal, orthodox for Josh Emmett. Emmett, an almost +300 underdog at +290. Zalal, almost a -400 favorite. He's a -390 favorite. I think that is really high. I understand Emmett isn't the same as he used to be in his youth, but come on, +290, -390, what are we doing here? Let's start with Emmett, man. Ranked at number 8, he's 40 years old from California, trains at Team Alpha Male out there, a lot of good fighters from there. 7 KOs and 2 subs give him 9 of his 19 wins, so this man's actually kind of a decision machine, but nonetheless, he's gotten 9 finishes. 2 of his 5 defeats have come by finish, and he's gone a decent 10-5 in the UFC as he heads towards his 16th career fight. Now, I won't lie, he is 1-3 in his last 4, I will point out. And, you know, he's good. You know, at one point he was on a 5-fight winning streak. He set some highlight reel knockouts of Ricardo Lamos, Michael Johnson, Mirsak Bektic, Bryce Mitchell, for goodness sakes, his last win, December 2023. But when he fought earlier this year in April against Lerone Murphy, he was really leaning on takedowns, which wasn't really good. Of course, this is the man who fought Yuta Pira and Yair Rodriguez in a calendar year. That's a tough test to ask. But, you know, Josh Emmett, I just think he's a tinge past his prime. If I'm being honest, there's always been some signs he's not as good as, you know, championship caliber. Of course, I don't think anyone thought he beat Calvin Kattar in 2022. And the Dan Ige fight where he almost knocked him out in round 1, he lost. You know, the end of round 2, they gave it to him, but then round 3 lost. So Josh Emmett coming in off a loss. I will say this man has been in two main events out of his last three fights. So we'll see how he does against the man who is stepping into the spotlight, Yusuf Zalal. Yusuf Zalal in action here, 29 years old from Morocco, now actually trains out of Denver, might I add. Currently rides a 7-fight winning streak out of his 17 wins, 13 finishes, 4 KOs and 9 subs. And of his 5 defeats, this man's never been put away. Can you believe that? This man has never been put away. He's currently 7-3-1 in the UFC, but he actually left after being cut in 2022. After he left, he would go 5-0 in MMA, boxing, and kickboxing combined, tallying 4 knockouts between all three of those. I think it was the MMA fight. He had a decision, and then boxing, kickboxing, knockout. The other MMA fights got knockout. Great work. Returned to the UFC in August of 2024. Scratched that, March of 2024. Gained a round 2 submission of Billy Quarantillo. In August of 2024, he would submit Jarno Ahrens. Then in November of last year, he would then submit Jack Shore, actually getting Jack Shore kicked out of the UFC. In his lone fight this year in February, he would beat Calvin Kattar to assume position at number 9 in the men's featherweight rankings. But yeah, also, this man fought Yutapir in Yutapir's debut, and Yutapir couldn't put him away, and he also almost submitted him at one point. His only other UFC losses, Sungwoo Choi and a split decision to Sean Woodson. That last loss, June of 2021. The only reason he was cut is because he moved down to bantamweight and went to a draw with Damon Blackshear. But this man's gone 4-0 since returning. This man's a massive favorite. I'm a big fan of changing of the guards. And as much as I would love to see Josh Emmett get this done, I really do think, actually, I'm going to be honest, I don't really want to see Josh Emmett get this done. I want to see the winning streak continue for Yusuf. I want to see him get this done. And if he can avoid the knockout power, distance strike this guy, even get to the ground, Yusuf Zalal could get a submission here. I'm pretty confident. So going with Yusuf Zalal over Josh Emmett. Emmett is a big favorite. After watching Neil Magny, something tells me I may be picking the wrong guy. But no. We're going to ride with Yusuf Zalal. And then, ladies and gentlemen, I've been waiting all week to talk about this. The big three. The big three matchups of the weekend. I mean, I'm just so excited for this light heavyweight division. You got the number 2 ranked Jiří Procházka. You got the number 4 ranked Khalil Roundtree Jr. This is UFC. This is what we're all about. This feels like a UFC, an Ultimate Fighting Championship fight. This is going to be awesome. And for some reason, they don't have nicknames. I swore Jiří and Khalil had nicknames. I guess they don't. Wasn't Khalil like the warhorse and Jiří was like, I don't even know what Jiří's nickname was, but hey, we know these guys in and out. Jiří is currently at minus 185. Khalil's at plus 150. So this is a super even fight. I mean, we can just go over the spiel here. Jiří is 31-5-1. Khalil is 50-6 with a no contest. 6'3 to 6'1, 2 inches in height for Jiří. He also has 4 inches in reach, 80 to 76. Orthodox hands for Jiří, southpaw for Khalil Roundtree Jr. I will say is that Jiří has historically struggled against southpaws, from my observation. But at the end of the day, I don't think anything really stops Jiří, and that's usually just Poatan giving him trouble. Who should we talk about first here, man? I don't even know. Let's just talk about Jiří, because Jiří Procházka is easily one of my favorite fighters in the UFC. 32 years old from the Czech Republic, 31 wins, 30 finishes, 27 KOs, 3 submissions. All of his losses have came by finish, you know, including 5 of them by KO. Actually, all of his losses, he's been KO'd. But to be fair, the only man to beat him in the UFC is Alex Pereira. And by the way, they both came in round 2. He could keep kicking Jiří Procházka out of there in round 1. My boy could always hang in there. And by the way, out of his entire career, his entire 37 professional fight career, he's only ever been the distance once, which he won, funny enough. So Jiří coming in, I mean, this is the dude who has had a finish in every one of his fights. The only time he hasn't gotten a fight the Nair performance bonus was when he lost to Alex Pereira. Other than that, he's been an absolute killer. Won earlier this year against Jamal Hill, been waiting all year for another fight. Last time he lost was to Alex Pereira. I mean, this dude is a legend. This dude is a savage, and he fights another tough guy in Khalil Roundtree Jr. Khalil, 35 years old from Las Vegas. 9 of his 15 wins are by KO. Of his 6 defeats, he's been finished 4 times. He's gone 10-6 with a no contest in the UFC. And as of late, similar scenario. I mean, he's currently 7-1 in his last 8, and his only defeat is to Alex Pereira in one of my favorite title fights of last year. He also fought Jamal Hill this year and beat him. Now, I will say is that when we observe those two fights, because it's both funny that both these guys fought Jamal Hill this year and absolutely whooped him, Khalil Roundtree Jr. just kind of stunted him over 5 rounds. Like, it was really boring. I remember watching on TV, like, this fight just sucks. It was 54-5 and a 49-46, and just nothing happened. There was a knockdown round 3, and Khalil did nothing with it, which really sucked. But yeah, when I look at how both these guys fought Alex Barrera. You know, you can look at the fact Khalil did better, but at the end of the day, Khalil is very standstill. Khalil is very counterfighting, and Jiri's going to be in his face. So what you're going to see here is either Khalil get overwhelmed or Khalil land that one big punch and put Jiri out. But Jiri's actually yet to really get knocked out in both of his fights against Alex Barrera. He just got TKO'd. So look, at the end of the day, you can put anyone in front of Jiri. I'm picking Jiri Prochazka, but if Khalil wins, I'll feel happy for him. Both these guys are trying to get back to a title shot, and I think either way, like, the light heavyweight division is in a really good spot if something happens in the main event, which we'll get to in a second. But Jiri over Khalil, and I'm going to say this right now, this is my favorite fight on the entire card. Hands down, my favorite fight. Now, the co-main event, bantamweight division, we look at the pound-for-pound rankings. He is the number 3 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet, the current reigning, defending, undisputed UFC bantamweight champion, the machine, Merab Dvalishvili. And he's taking on the number 4 ranked, Corey Sandhagen. That's right, Corey Sandhagen is not the most moxie of people, I'll say. Merab is 20-4, Corey is 18-5, 5 inches in height for Sandhagen, 2 inches of reach for Sandhagen as well, 70-68. Switch stance for Corey, orthodox for Merab. And that is right, we all know, we all love both these guys, but Merab is nearing minus 400, Corey's at plus 300 currently. This one is just, it's kind of just a what if. Will Corey Sandhagen maybe beat Merab with a knockout punch? I don't know. I genuinely have no idea. But then today, like, I'll cover this real quick, but it's Merab. I can pencil in Merab. I genuinely don't see an alternate reality where Corey Sandhagen wins this. I just really don't. So, Merab, 34 years old, born in Georgia, always out in Georgia, trains out of New York, of course, training partner, Aljamain Sterling, one of his best boys. Of his 20 wins, he has 5 finishes. He is also known as the decision machine, which I think is funny. And he's currently on a 13-fight win streak. I mean, this man started out 0-2 in the UFC. By the way, bogus split decision and a fight he should have won. Weirdest submission you've ever seen against Ricky Simon. He has since won 13 straight. Like, this man is trying to break a record right now, and it's insane. Also has some of the most takedowns in UFC history. I'm trying to do a quick total, which is really hard to do in my head right now. I'm at 38. I'm at 43, 45. We're at 58. We're at 80, 85, 90, 97. This man has over 100 takedowns in the UFC. That's insane. But as of late, you know, this man has been on just a tear. Since beating Jose Aldo in 2022, then beating Piotr Jan, then beating Henry Cejudo, then beating O'Malley for the belt, then defending earlier this year against Umar Magomedov, which is still probably my favorite title fight of the year. And then, of course, fighting Sean O'Malley at UFC 316 in June and truly ending his run. Truly just reminding everyone he is the best as he got a round 3 guillotine choke, which was awesome. I absolutely love that moment. So, Merab going for his third title defense here. He's already 2-0 in 2025 with a fight of the night and a performance of the night. And this man is just unstoppable. So, Merab, kudos to you as you go to take on Corey Sandhagen. 33 years old from Colorado. He has 8 KOs and 3 subs. 11 of the 18 wins are by finish. Of his 5 defeats, he's only ever been submitted once. Wow. Currently 11-4 in the UFC. Sandhagen has been with the UFC since 2018, you know, he's been on a 5-fight win streak before losing to Sterling. Will then land 2 highlight reel knockouts in 2021 and 2020 over Marlon Moraes and Frank Yeager. Since that, nothing really. Nothing really. Lost a bogus split decision to TJ Dillashaw. Lost a fight to Pierre Yod, which I thought he would. That was one of the weirdest things I've watched. Then schools Song Yedong, grapples Marlon Vera, grapples Rob Font, gets grappled by Umar Nurmagomedov, and then won a performance bonus for beating Devin Figueiredo on a main event in Des Moines earlier this year. So Sandhagen coming in off a TKO actually over Devin Figueiredo, although he got injured on that. I do want to say, look, Sandhagen, I love that you're finally getting a title shot, but you're unfortunately taking on my GOAT, my greatest of all time in the bantamweight division, Merab Dvalishvili. You know what? I'm going with a Merab finish here, whether by knockout, whether by sub, probably sub over anything. I got Merab beating Corey under 4. Merab all day. If Sandhagen wins, this will be the talk of the weekend, because then Sean O'Malley's getting another title shot. I kid you not, if Corey Sandhagen wins, they're giving Sean O'Malley another title shot. Mark my words. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the main event. We head back to the men's pound for pound rankings as the number, where's this guy at? 7. They got Magomed Ankalaev at 7. The number 7th ranked pound for pound fighter takes on the number 10 ranked Alex Pereira, otherwise known as the number 1 contender Alex Pereira, and the champion Magomed Ankalaev in the men's light heavyweight division. Yeah. Magomed coming in 21-1 no contest. He got a loss, he got a draw, he got a no contest, and 21 wins. For Pereira, 12-3. 6'4 to 6'3, 1 inch in height for Pereira, and 4 inches in reach, 79-75. Both men are in the orthodox stance. So I was wrong. Jiri, I thought Pereira was in the southpaw stance. My bad. My bad, that's some wrong info on my part. I'm CNN, I'm spreading fake news right now. But Ankalaev rematch against Poatan, they fought earlier this year in March. It was Ankalaev all day. That fight sucked. We don't need to sugarcoat that fight at all. The biggest moment, round two, Magomed almost knocking out Pereira before the round ended. That was really the biggest moment of the whole fight. But Ankh at minus 220, Poatan at plus 180. Odds makers are not giving Ankh a underdog little thing here. No, they know that he is the better fighter. Magomed Ankalaev is 33 years old and is from Dagestan, Russia, but is kind of rejected by the Dagestanis for tapping in his debut. Since that tap, though, this man has won 12 straight fights, a 14 fight unbeaten streak if you look at the draw, no contest. And by the way, he should have beat Yablovich in that fight. Let's not mention that. And out of those, 21 wins, 11 knockouts. This man hasn't gotten a knockout since he knocked out Johnny Walker, but, you know, beat Rakic at UFC 308 and beat Ox Bear earlier this year. And, you know, he said he wasn't going to shoot a takedown, but he didn't. He shot 12 takedowns and didn't land any, but did rack up 5 minutes of control time. Also outstruck him in rounds 2, rounds 4, and round 5, and looked drastically better than him in round 4 and 5, might I add. So Magomed coming in, looking to beat Poatan again as Alex Pereira steps in for yet another title fight. Poatan is 38 years old, born in Brazil, but now fights out of Connecticut. Of his 12 wins, 10 knockouts. Of his 3 defeats, he's been finished twice. He's currently gone 9-2 in the UFC, and I forgot he had a 26-7 kickboxing record. This guy was very stellar at kickboxing. Of course, came into the UFC, went 4-0, beat Adesanya, lost Adesanya, went up to light heavyweight, was your fighter of the year last year with 3 knockouts, 3 main events. He was awesome, but I'm looking at 2025 Pereira. Okay, and 2025 Pereira was just stunted by Magomed Ankalaev. He really was, and I don't know what improvements one can make between March and between October to then beat a guy. Like, Magomed knows what he needs to do here, and especially if Magomed actually lands one of those takedowns, he'll just hold him down at the end of the day. Now, my prediction comes from me actually thinking Magomed Ankalaev is going to win. I also really like the odds of Magomed putting away Poatan here, but I also think Pereira shouldn't even be taking this. Okay, I wouldn't even be mad if Pereira pulled out and we have Jiří Procházka or Khalil Roundtree Jr. fight Magomed Ankalaev. It'd probably be Jiří, which would be awesome. But I just think Pereira should have gone to heavyweight. That's what I think. It was set up for him to fight maybe Curtis Blaydes, maybe Sergey Pavlovich. I really would like the Sergey Pavlovich fight. And then go and fight Aspinall, you know, or even just give him the title fight against Aspinall, which I think with a loss here, he can still do that. He can still do that. So I'm riding with Magomed Ankalaev. I think it is a best for business win too, because the winner of Khalil and Jiri can fight the winner of Ulberg and Magomed, and you can get this light heavyweight division rolling, and you're going to have so many guys coming up as well. Like, when I look at the light heavyweight division, you got guys like Rakic who are a win or two away. You got Osmat Mirzakhanov coming up, Bogdan Guskov coming up. Like, there is a lot of options here, and I just think if Pereira wins, like, it's just going to create this spiral, because, like, if Pereira wins another decision, like, do we run it back? If Pereira knocks him out, like, is that just it for Ankh? I don't know, but Pereira always has the knockout power. I do think that's one thing that'll make this fight rewatchable again, the fact that Alex Pereira can put your lights out at any point. But I would really love to see Magomed Ankalaev go and put out Poatan here. I think it would really give some emphasis that Magomed is dangerous, and it would extend his win streak to 13. So we're gonna go with Magomed to retain, Marab to retain. No new champions here, but I do see a lot of finishes on this UFC 20 fight card, 320 that is. But yeah, that's all I got for today's episode. UFC 320, I'm up for it. I really am. October's going to be a great month. If you guys didn't know, now you know. I'm moving to Chicago, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. I got a new job. We're switching it up from Minnesota. It's going to be exciting. I'm pumped for it. Me in Chicago, and, you know, I don't know how recording's going to go, but we're going to keep recording these podcasts. Trust me, I will sit on a little alleyway and record these at the end of the day. But yeah, thanks for watching. UFC 320. What a fun card, and I can't wait to watch it. And we'll be recapping it next week. We're also going to be going over Crown Jewel. That's going to be exciting. And, of course, a new Dan West Contender Series episode. Let me know who you guys are riding with for our Week 5 NFL predictions, because I predicted a lot of underdogs, and I don't know if they're all going to get it done. But, yes, with that, ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.